our latest castaway on ESC Insight's Eurovision Castaways podcast is Matt Baker of the Second Cherry podcast and ESC Extra. We recorded this interview back in March, and what with one thing and another, it's taken until now to put it out. So you may notice a few timey-wimey things. Here we go. And welcome. Ellie calling. Here we are again on the beautiful Ile de Besançon, where somehow it's always early May. The sun is shining, the temperature is comfortable, coffee, loo roll and local beverages are free and plentiful, and yet we've got a strangely restrictive policy on music imports. Every Eurovision fan who comes here to stay is only allowed 8 Eurovision songs for the duration, and here at the customs desk I really want to know why it's those specific 8, and so we just have a nice chat about it. And there's also something to do with Sue Lawley that means that I've got to ask about a Eurovision luxury. And unlike other castaway destinations, we don't give you the Bible and Shakespeare. We give you Waterloo and Valare, which are both considerably more fun at a party. And I've got a castaway coming up the gangplank. Hello there. You're Matt Baker of ESC Extra and Second Cherry.
That's correct. They're the one and only.
Keeping us up to date with Eurovision news and also helping us decide which of the songs that don't actually get to Eurovision are the best.
Yes, because Second Cherry is all about songs. We bill it as almost a Eurovision podcast. We basically review national finals and songs and have an alternative contest, which is very well attended in a live event and fun. Absolutely.
So we'd better get onto the paperwork. We traditionally start with a song about your Eurovision origin story, and here we have Save All Your Kisses for Me by the Brotherhood of Man for the UK, 1976.
With your cute little way, will you promise that you'll say your kisses for me, save all your kisses for me. Bye bye, baby, bye bye. Don't cry, honey, don't cry. Gonna walk out the door, but I'll soon be back for more.
Yeah, it's not really my origin story, but it's probably the earliest song which kind of I remember it from my childhood, not that I was alive in 76, but it kind of, it's for me, the reason why I'm choosing this is because it represents to me what is quintessential 1970s music, but also music we had at the Eurovision Song Contest. It came through the Song for Europe TV show, and it was the first time that singers could actually put themselves forward to go to Eurovision rather than have to be nominated by someone. And so, which I find really interesting. And yeah, I just feel like it's a lovely sing-along track. The choreography is just twee and lovely. A little twist at the end when there is the whole thing about the sing to the 3-year-old. And yeah, I just feel like it's just got the right amount of whimsy. I just think it's a really lovely song. So it just encapsulates Eurovision of yesteryear.
And a whimsical song about somebody's kid which involves some dance moves. I can't see that ever happening again.
Yes, indeed.
Actually, while Daddy Frere is covering Eurovision songs, we'll take her Save All Your Kisses.
Ooh, we need to make that happen. We need to put pressure on him to do that, because he could do this really well, I think.
Yeah, he can do that. So...
I think I am probably about the same age as you, so I was also aware of Save All Your Kisses as kind of just part of the sort of pop canon.
Yeah.
And it took me a while to realise that it was not only a Eurovision song, but a Eurovision winning song.
Yeah, it's weird how that's the case, because I was aware of this song, and then, you know, because it was number one just before it went to Eurovision, number one in the UK. And yeah, it's like one of the biggest selling Eurovision tracks from the UK ever. So it kind of has this real resonance in the UK industry, really, as a, you know, not, it's not just a Eurovision in our little Eurovision sphere that we're aware of it. It's, you know, my mum's aware of it, my granddad's aware of, you know, that sort of thing. So yeah, imagine,
like, UK Eurovision songs used to have the same amount of sort of cultural cut through that you see with like the San Remo songs nowadays.
Yeah, imagine that now. Imagine, you know, we're trying to do that nowadays. We've gone back to getting it played on Radio 1 this year, which was a baby step forward. But it would be great to go back to those days where everybody, and I mean everybody, is excited about the UK entry going to Eurovision.
The retro Top of the Pops episodes that they put on BBC4, it felt like Brotherhood of Man was on about 6 months worth of those. Like, imagine A, Top of the Pops being back, and imagine B, the UK Eurovision song being on Top of the Pops every week for 6 months.
That is crazy to think about that, but that's how it used to be. It's crazy.
Absolutely. Yeah,
I would be okay with that this year. With well, now that we don't have a Eurovision for 2020, then My Last Breath by James Newman, that would have been nice to see week in, week out on a BBC TV show.
Yeah. Oh, what a nice man James Newman is as well. Anyway, I think we can definitely say that Save All Your Kisses for Me is joining us on Ilde Besenson. Accepted. Great. Let's move on to your second record. We're taking it back to the 90s, and we have Sonia with Better the Devil You Know.
Baby, don't do things that make me blue. You know my love is always true. Baby, don't do things that make me cry. I just can't seem to sleep at night. You know I love him every day. It breaks my heart.
And that was Sonia for the UK in 1993. Tell us about it.
Well, this is my origin story. This is. So I remember seeing Sonia. I kind of been aware of the song, actually, before it went to Eurovision, I think. But I remember seeing Sonia on stage, and I was sitting in my living room, legs crossed, with my Game Boy, the original Game Boy, in my hand, probably playing Mario. And just watching Sonia sort of two-step through this song with this bolero jacket type purple jumpsuit, and just I just think it nabbed me then. That's when I sort of was aware of Eurovision and how amazing it was. And also, I think it's probably the root of me being a gay man, seeing that sort of performance. But you know, just really, really good. Again, did well in the charts, so you know it had resonance, you know, in the UK. But yeah, it's still one of my favorite songs, and is the reason why I'm here.
It was a song for Europe that Sonia won to go to Eurovision in 1993.
Yeah, I think they did international. The BBC got some international heads from broadcasters, I suppose, headed delegations in today's terms. They asked who should we select, and they said Sonia, and then Sonia had an 8-song national final, and this one won quite easily, I think.
This was just after she'd left the Stock Aitken Waterman stable.
I think so, because she didn't do a huge amount after this. I could be wrong.
Because that's how they managed to get 8 songs with some kind of sonic variety.
Yes. Well,
actually, imagine an 8-song Stock Aitken Waterman national final. Good grief.
Oh, God. Well, it wouldn't be 8 song. It would be, like, different versions of the same song, right?
Well, I mean, I anyway, we're now deep down the Stock Aitken Waterman nightmare hole. So we should back out.
Do you know, I've got a funny story, though, about this, because I used to work, this is many, many moons ago, I used to work with a woman who... we sat down to lunch one day. She was quite new, and she sort of said to me, "Oh, you know, I really like Sonia." I'm like, "Oh, great, yeah, you know." She's like, went to Eurovision, had a bit of chat about that. She's like, "No, I really like Sonia. Actually, it all got a bit crazy, and actually, she's got an injunction against me. I can't really see her anymore." I was like, "Oh, okay." I'm just going to finish my lunch and right, cheers for that. And you're like, yeah, so she's still got her fans, I know that much.
Good grief. And so your passion for Sonia remains at moderate levels.
Yes, just to be clear, I like Sonia not that much that I need to follow her about every day.
Well, that's good. And let's hope that Sonia remains in peace. So Better the Devil You Know. Yeah, for sure. Let's have some early 90s frothy dance fun on Hilda Besançon. Yes. Accepted. Abruptly moving to the 2010s. Is that what we call this decade? 2010s.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, the 2010s, where your song 3 comes from Cyprus, and it's La La Love by Evie Idamu, 2012.
Nothing's so fair when you're near. Oh, I feel the energy between you and me. Baby, it's alright. Oh, I feel the energy just hanging up there. Oh, I've been waiting for this. La 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 la.
And that was Cyprus 2012. I think you might be slightly more team banger than team ballad.
I like a good example of a type. So this is 100% a banger. It is everything I want. This song actually represents a first for me, and that was my experience of being in the Euroclub with other fans, like in that sort of dancey disco setting. So even though this was actually, we're going to jump forward in 2013, but that actually happened. But this song, whilst played in the Euroclub in 2013, just completely reminds me. I remember seeing it on stage and thinking, why did that only come 16th? That is incredible. And then a year later, I realised, oh, it's a fan favourite. Why the hell didn't it do any better than 16th? It's still a mystery to me, really. But I suppose, I don't know, it was staged well, had lots of energy. I don't know. It got into the UK top 100 after Eurovision, actually. And the only other song from that same year to do that was Euphoria. So, why didn't it do any better?
I feel like this was where jury and televote points were still combined per country. So I feel like low jury rankings could potentially have given it a massive drag. But I haven't got the split votes in front of me, so I can't confirm that.
Yeah, it could have been something like that, because it must have got a fan vote for sure. Televote.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what confused me about Evie Adamu is because I'd been listening to the song and watching the video in the run-up, and she had this kind of amazing, ethereal, like Alice in Wonderland, chess, Queen of Hearts vibe going on in the video. And it was sort of quite mystic. And then none of that really showed up on stage.
Yeah, it's a weird one how things translate or don't translate. Didn't she say it was about Snow White or something like that? Or it had a, I don't know, something, some sort of meaning like that. But yeah, I always wonder what goes through people's minds when they think about the staging and how we're going to deliver this. Because when you have a video like that, it kind of lends itself and you think you kind of know what you might get on stage at Eurovision, but it didn't really... didn't pull through to that, did it? It was kind of... What was she standing on? Like a stone... Yeah, a stone plinth thing with... Was there books underneath it or slab? I don't know.
I don't know. I've got in my head... I'm not looking at a picture or anything, but I remember it as being like a bit of temple ruin or something.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it, like, there were books underneath. I don't know. It was really odd. But the performance was great. Really high energy. And yeah, this is quintessential bop. But this reminds me of being with fans. And I remember, so in 2013, we'll come on to that in a minute, but it was my first Eurovision that I went to. But I remember meeting loads of fans. And it was, actually met Monty Moncrief, actually, friend of the parish. I know you guys, he's on the island with us. I actually met him in 2013, but none of us remember that. No, we don't. We're just told that you guys were introduced, but and then here we are down the line doing a podcast together, second chair.
is there any photographic evidence of this?
No, I remember it was in, well, I'm told it was in the Euro Village in 2013. Not the village, there's like a little cafe, wasn't there, with the green and all that sort of things, so in 2013 in Malmo, I think. Apparently that's where we met, but I don't remember, he doesn't remember, but here we are. But I do remember it being really welcoming. Like, I think it's the first time, it wasn't just being, you know, in the Euro Club and discovering that, but it was the actual fans and how friendly they were. Because I kind of, and it's kind of led me on to how I treat other fans, because I do feel like there can be a bit of a snobbishness. So I'm fairly new. I really got obsessed with Eurovision. Even though my origin story is Sonia in 93, I didn't really grab onto it until Loreen won. Mm. I'm one of those. And it's really funny how people can be quite snobbish about it. And, you know, some fans are a little bit like, oh, you weren't, you know, you only came, you know, when Loreen won. And I kind of feel like a fan is a fan regardless of how you reach the contest and, you know, what your journey is. So I kind of... Yeah, I think I remember being in a bar in Lisbon actually in 2018. There was a woman there and she said, oh, I love Eurovision, but oh, I'm not a fan like you guys. You know, I don't really know any of the songs. I was like, well, you're a fan. You're here. You're with, you're amongst us.
Yeah, you've come to Lisbon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really can't be doing with gatekeeping. It's just like there is plenty of fun to be had, and I don't think that sharing it with people is a bad thing. The community is one of the best things about being a Eurovision fan, and the more people and the more nice people and the more welcoming the vibe in the community, the better.
Absolutely. I the community that we have is the best place and the worst place at times. I've some of the worst things that have ever been said to my face have been said by a Eurovision fan, but also some of the best stuff. So, you know, we like to concentrate on the good stuff.
Yeah. Like one of the things that happens at ESC Extra, the live stream is a really nice community thing. I know that you're not on it very often, but you facilitate it.
Yeah, I mean, during Eurovision, we've had the live stream and it's the same people turning up, making the same jokes, you know. We know there's one person who's going to make one joke and say one little phrase, and it's quite nice. I quite like that, actually. There's people dip into it. It's just a shame we don't get to do that this year. There's no Eurovision, but I feel like that's what all fan sites should be doing. It should be fan led or sort of for the fans. I think sometimes we all lose sight of that sometimes, but I think, yeah, that's the way it should be. Fan content for fans.
Yeah, I don't really want to feel like we're in a position of telling people what they should like and what they shouldn't like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or even just like uncritically passing on promo messages that we receive from PRs or anything. It's... like actually listening to people will allow you to make content that actually appeals to them.
Absolutely.
That's simple.
The way forward.
Well, anyway, Evie Adamu is sort of being left to the side in all of this with her genius bop emanating from a corner of the Mediterranean that has given us bops aplenty. So I think, yes, we'll have Evie on the island. Accepted. Great. Your fourth record is Robin Sternberg's Andra Shansen winning You,
now, this
that represented Sweden
first,
in 2013.
It's all because of you. All because of you. It's all because of you.
And that was Robin with You.
Yes. Now, this is my first. As I said before, it's my first time at Eurovision. We decided to go after watching a very drunken house party. My friend turned up. He'd just come from the rugby. He was absolutely steaming. We watched Eurovision. We were like, we're going to go, it's amazing, so great, we're going to go next year. And then the next morning, I rang him up and was like, yeah, great, you know, let's work out how we're going to do Eurovision. He's like, what? Oh, you really meant that? I was like, yeah, yeah, we're going. It's, you know, we've been, you know, saying this for ages, we're going to go, we're going to do it, do not fight me on this, we're going to go. So we did. And yeah, it's just, you know, we all have that time, our first year is the one which kind of you remember almost every aspect of it, you know, the meeting people, the arena, the Euroclub, the everything, you know, all the songs from 2013, I remember. And just, yeah, there's just some really great videos out there actually on social media of me dancing in Twonk, I think there was the club called Twonk.
Uh-huh.
Was the Euro Club.
I wasn't there in 2013, so I will take your word for it.
Yeah, I think it was. And then, yeah, just like, and there's this song, Robin's Song You, just played out across the Euroclub. And then my friend took a video from behind me. I mean, I was sweating. I was sweating all over me. It looked gruesome. But yeah, just dancing. I think we actually at one point got told off by security guards in the Euroclub because we pulled together a load of like seats. I made like a catwalk walkway and everyone was getting on it. And yeah, we got in trouble for that. But yeah, just really great stuff. We stayed in Copenhagen, got, you know, the over the bridge on the train, and it just a really nice contest, I think. A really good one to start off with, I think. Yeah, so Robin, I think, again, another one. It came 14th. This is crazy for me because, again, it was a home, it had the home crowd behind it, they were clapping along. I just feel like it could have done better. I don't know whether it was the staging was a bit odd. Some of these dancers dancing around didn't quite equate to the song for me. It was a beautiful song. I think it's sort of about a friend who's no longer with us, writing songs together. I think it had that sort of vibe about it. I think he said that. But it's... It didn't, yeah, the weird dancers all over the place kind of, I think, might have taken from that.
I think it's one where they fiddled with the staging between Melfest and the contest, and it was a negative fiddle.
Yeah, for sure. That weird journey, though, of Melfest, to come third in the heat during Melodifestivalen, but then went to Andra Shansen, won the duel, but there is, like, if you look at the votes, wasn't even getting the most votes during Andra Shansen, and then wins the final. It's great. There's a great video online. Everybody should go and Google it and just look at the final points as they come in, and it's just crazy. And his reaction, like, oh my god, I've won, I'm going to Eurovision. It's really nice to see.
Yeah, he'd got a mini break booked, he wasn't expecting it.
Yeah.
Oh, but and they've never let that happen again. I feel like there was a little bit more unpredictability in Melfests towards the start of the decade.
Why do you think that is? Because of producer-led and things like that? They try and control stuff like that now?
Yeah, although I feel like maybe this year it wasn't... It didn't quite go to plan.
No. similar thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The very first song of this year's Melfest ended up being the final one standing.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Well, I'm sure they know what they're doing. The extremely long run of Left Hand Side and top 10 results is testament to that. And even this, one of Melfest's like less successful winners, is still an absolute banger and a really good one to holler along at the top of your lungs to in Euroclub.
Yeah, for sure. And that kind of falsetto bit, I'm not going to do it now, but it's kind of like everybody just ruins it, which is the good thing about it when you're drunk in the club.
and we will again.
Always.
Okay. Yes. You is accepted onto Ile de Besançon. Okay, onto your fifth record, we've got Iceland 2015, which is Unbroken by Maria Olafsdottir. I'm letting go. And that was Unbroken by Maria Olafsdottir. Tell us your story about this one.
Well, here's the thing. Some songs just really resonate with you, and it's not because they are the best song or anything like that. So this song didn't qualify, as we know, for the Saturday night final, although it did win its national final in Iceland. But it is the flimsiest of flimsy pop. But the reason why it resonates for me is because I, in a former life, in the past, I was in a very different situation. I had a stepson I was in a relationship, and this song always reminded me of him. You know, I used to listen to it on the school run with him, and you know, taking him to his school. Now, it's the lyrics are quite special because it's kind of about, you know, being unbroken and taking one step at a time, and because this little boy had learning difficulties, it kind of resonated with me. And then that relationship ended, I have to say, and so I don't see that little boy anymore. And it's really funny now how when I now look at the lyrics now, it's kind of done a turnaround, and now the meaning is kind of about me and my relationship with Aaron, the boy. And it's really interesting. I just wanted to read out like the lyrics, because again, it's like so flimsy pop, but when you actually read the lyrics and you read it through my eyes, it's completely different. So it's one step at a time, into the distance, one foot in front of the other, one step at a time, try to forget you, although you said forever, I'm letting go. One step at a time, get out of the darkness and into the light forever. One step at a time, I pick up the pieces, trying to put them back together until I'm unbroken. And I just, every time I hear it now, in fact, I don't listen to it very often now because it can set me off, but it is just this weird mix of, it's not the best song in the world. It didn't deserve to qualify. Vocally, it was a little bit iffy. But the song itself and the lyrics just mean so, so much to me. I have to have it on the island.
And you absolutely will. And, like, maybe everybody else might want to have a little bit of a listen to Unbroken and think about one foot in front of the other, taking one step at a time and getting through whatever they're getting through.
Yeah, it's got a message. Maybe it can speak to other people, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. We will definitely have Unbroken on the island.
Yes.
Accepted. Your sixth song. We are in 2016. We're in Stockholm. And representing Bulgaria is the triumphant Polygenova with If Love Was a Crime. Together we're untouchable. You and me against the world. Together we're invincible. They'll never break us down. I'm in love with the And that was If Love Was a Crime by Polly Genova.
Yeah, so this is one of my favourite Eurovision songs ever. For so many reasons, it's really weird the relationship I have with this song. So in 2016, I went to the contest on my own. It was, you know, some songs, some artists, they just stay with you. So things like, you know, the song keeps cropping up on your playlist, or, you know, I just felt like, I was going to say, hold on, I'm sorry. So, you know, this song keeps cropping up on your playlist, or, you know, you've seen them live. For this was a winning bet for me. I won lots of money, thanks to Polly.
Nice.
I'll forever be grateful. In the Euroclub, after the Saturday night final, she was drunk, almost falling off the balcony. Her, like, delegation had to hold her, but she was just clearly just completely enjoying it. Everyone appreciated that. I've seen her at Eurofest, the London Club night, where she was invited. I've seen her being interviewed at Eurobash as well, the sort of OGA UK fan convention thing we have here in the UK. And it's just, we always seem to follow each other around. I'm not following her, by the way.
We're having a Sonia situation.
No Sonia situation. But I suppose if there was somebody who was going to be like that with, I suppose it would be Polly Genova.
I saw her a couple of weeks ago at UMK in Finland, where she was getting absolutely fired into the VIP buffet. What a legend.
I love everything about her. She's quite, you know, pretty, and she can do that class, you know, she's quite elegant, but yeah, I can absolutely see her just like necking down some McDonald's or something. She's like one of those sort of all-rounders. I love her to bits. This song, though, I mean, you know, I think this is perfectly staged. You know, it started with the close-up of her face. It was well-paced throughout to the big sort of ending when her backing dancers / singers came on. I feel like it was just perfection. And because didn't Bulgaria had like a 2-year break before this in 2016? This was them returning.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of set off this mini golden age for Bulgaria. I know they haven't won, but it just set this wheels in motion of great acts, great songs, staged well, almost winning.
Like, really high quality stuff from them every time they've come back.
Yeah. I mean, they want, we spoke about this before, you know, we've been saying it for years now, that they wanted it, or probably still do want it, but, you know, they really, really went for it. This was them going for it and just didn't quite achieve what they wanted to.
But they've still given us something that you can drop this one and it fills the dance floor. And everybody is chanting along in Bulgarian, which, give me another record that can do that.
Oh, God, yeah, no. You don't even know what you're saying, but you'll sing it loud and proud.
Oh, daimi lubofta.
Yeah. Yeah, that.
Yeah, that. It means give your love to me.
Yeah. But, you know, that's all that matters. The thing is, that's the great thing about that songwriting, is that you put in your native language, but just enough where people who don't understand what that is can still say it and sing it and still kind of get the meaning, even though you don't really know what it is. That's brilliant songwriting for Eurovision, I think.
Yeah, I think also the fact that it's sort of got two choruses, or maybe two pre-choruses and the Bulgarian chanty bit, but the structure works very well, and there's, yeah, just enough Bulgarian in there.
Yeah, it's perfection for me. It's like the perfect Eurovision package.
I do feel quite bad for poor Victoria George.
Yeah, I mean,
it did look like they had a serious contender this year.
Yeah. They, you know, for, again, talking about how the video was, if we were going to get that on stage at Eurovision, yeah, possibly. I mean, it was the favourite, wasn't it, in the odds?
Just about.
I mean, who knows? Who knows? We know we would have got great staging from Bulgaria, I think.
Absolutely.
I think it's safe to say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, gutted for her, actually.
Oh.
Although, but haven't we, at time of recording, had they not said she'll be back? Have they confirmed that?
Yes, at time of recording, they've confirmed that Bulgaria are definitely back, and I think it's also definitely going to be Victoria again. And the sponsors have agreed to sponsor them for another year. So, yeah.
Phew.
Phew, fingers crossed we can keep Bulgaria with us. Maybe get Hungary and Montenegro back after they've taken a year out and saved some money.
Yeah, hopefully. Or maybe... yeah, hopefully.
Maybe. Oh, it would be nice to get back up to 43 again.
Yes.
Have some like painfully long semi-finals.
We love that, though.
Yes, yeah. I'm here for a three-hour show on a Tuesday night. But yes, Polly, If Love Was a Crime, I think a couple of people have brought it to the island already, but we're going to play it so often, we're going to need another copy. So,
for sure.
Accepted.
Great.
Your seventh song, and we're taking a little bit of a left turn into national finals land. We have an Australia Decides song from 2019, and it's The Electric Fields with 2000 and Whatever. That was 2000 and Whatever. Magnificent.
Yeah. Now, this is why I follow Eurovision, and this is why we do the Second Cherry podcast. Because, you know, everything about this I love in terms of the artist, the song, the style, the place it kind of sat within the national final. There's like this weird... Not weird, it's not weird at all, but this incredible intersection of LGBTQI+, you know, millennial anthem, first people, Indigenous, you know, Australian people, representation. It is just everything coming together that I just love. During Second Cherry, we have the podcast, and then we have the live show at the end where we vote on the alternative winner of Eurovision. And I just at one point during Second Cherry last year, I sort of stopped, looked out at the crowd and saw everyone sort of singing along to this. And I just thought, oh, please win. I can say that now. But I wanted this to win Second Cherry 2019. But obviously we got Maruv. But this was just everything that I love about following national finals and learning about new music. You know, it was so different from a lot of the songs last year, not just in the national final for Australia, but just generally, just the sweep of songs. Just, yeah, I love it. It's a real favourite of mine. I've worn this out. If I had this on record, it would be worn out.
Their national final performance was just astonishing. So, like, there were some performances in that Australia Decides competition that had a bit of money spent on them. But
yes.
2000 and Whatever, I think maybe there was, like, 50 quid's worth of graphics on the background and maybe, like, a new headscarf for Zed. And that was about it. And yet, it was so compelling.
Yeah. I can't help, you know, we all said it, that the vocals weren't great. It probably could have been, I think actually they said the rehearsal was even worse, but the vocal wasn't great, but you just didn't care. It's everything that song is about. I'm really impressed with Australia's national final. I think they're in a safe pair of hands with Paul Clark, I think,
mm-hmm.
who's running it. It's a strong, every year they've had strong songs, a nice mix of songs. I think they've got one eye on the future, Any Given Time, which is great. Because don't they have, now, correct me if I'm wrong, but they have Triple J, sort of a radio station, and it's kind of this cool alternative acts that are kind of attracted to that. And I think they're trying to get some of these Triple J artists part of the national final. And I think that's a really good way to go. It's kind of pushing its own identity rather than trying to say copy Melfest or something like that.
It's
trying to push its own identity. I love that. I'm really excited about what they're going to do next year.
Well, they had three Triple J artists in Australia Decides 2020. They had Montaigne, they had Jaguar Jones, and they had Didiri.
Yeah.
Didiri.
Yeah.
And obviously Montaigne winning through Rabbit Hole by Jaguar Jones is the strong fan favourite, and Didiri sort of showing his sort of sad boy songwriter chops. Just really strong, really strong. And I hope that they, however they select an artist for 2021, I hope that they keep up with this ethos of talent and quality, basically.
Quick interruption from the future. We know that Montaigne's been confirmed for 21. Cheers.
Yeah, they're doing nothing wrong. Just stick with it.
Yeah. Oh, I really want to go out and dance to 2000 and whatever with a room full of sweaty Eurovision fans.
Yeah, that is heaven.
Yeah. One day soon. So yes, 2000 and whatever accepted with knobs on to the island.
Yes.
Okay, now we're coming right up to date with your eighth and final song. We have from the renewed Lithuanian national selection, we've got Monique and Make Me Human.
I beg you to stay, make the pain go away. Let me be the one spending my days stuck in this maze. Staring at the sun. Open up my eyes and see.
And that was Monique.
Yes. So this is a first for me, another first. This was my first national final that I went to, which wasn't UK. And it was the greatest experience. I'd never been to Lithuania before. I've not really been to that region of Europe before. The national final obviously has been revamped this year. They've gone for a smaller selection, but in the bigger arena. They've attached it to like their national day. I forget the name of it now. It's not Independence Day, but it's like their
Liberation Day.
That's right, that's the word. And so because it was in the big hall and sort of like part of that celebration, they had a captive audience. So, you know, the Roop who won went to number one, and they are massive now in Lithuania because of that. Yeah, it's just absolutely the way they should have done this national final. It's, I think if they tried to do a national final in an arena like that, they would have struggled to sell tickets maybe. So just very ingenious way they've really thought about this. And yeah, just the branding of it, and yeah, they did really well. So I'm very, very lucky and very privileged to have a contact in the delegation who were allowing me to see the rehearsals of the national final. And it was the most incredible experience. So I was sitting behind like the control desk, as it were, sort of while they were sort of rehearsing, and then coming down to right in front of me, sitting down at the control desk and sort of running through and sort of like making changes and stuff like that. And just seeing that kind of process and seeing how that works, like kind of behind the TV screen, as it were, mm-hmm. was the most incredible thing. You know, I don't come from TV or radio, that's not my job, so to see that working, it was just a real privilege, actually. And Monique is a big star, and they were, I think it's safe to say they've been trying to get her for a number of years, and it was because of this revamp and because the industry in Lithuania were consulted that they managed to nab her and get her part of this national final. So it's a real shame for me that it didn't win. I love the Roop, it's fine, but this was my favourite, and I just feel like the potential on the Eurovision stage, this Make Me Human, you know, robot wanting to be human, it just resonated. And just the visuals, what they did was just so incredible. I just think, if only it made it to the Eurovision stage, what they would have done. I just feel like this is the way you do your national final. And, you know, Lithuania, they don't have huge amounts of money, but they nailed it, I think, this year.
Absolutely. In that final, there was maybe only one that you couldn't really have imagined taking to the Eurovision stage, if that. That was a great final and a really good show that they put together. And I really hope that they can do something next year that is just as artistically fulfilling for everybody who's involved.
Yeah, it has to be. I don't think they'll get someone like Monique next year. They won't get Monique next year, but maybe they'll get someone like her, hopefully, fingers crossed.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, so... Oh, but you know, I had a say in what happened on stage. Can I say this? Watching rehearsals, Kaya and Alligator,
mm-hmm.
one of the songs. So if you look at the national final performance, they have English subtitles on the screen, but in the backdrop, as it were.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there watching, thinking, that's a spelling mistake. Oh, that doesn't make sense. Oh, that's, you know, and I said nothing because obviously it's very, everyone's getting on doing the work. And I actually text Audris, the head delegation who was producing the show, and was like, don't need to interrupt you, but do you realise those English subtitles are wrong? Is that going to be part of the performance? And he sort of turned around and was like, what? I was like, so we had to go through them, and they're silly little things, they just misspelt want, and so there was some capitalization and not, and it was all a bit of a mess, but they were like, oh my, thank God, thank you, that was, we didn't even think of that, we were about to, you know, looking at the artists and what was going on stage, not the words. So I kind of feel like I helped my own little way. I helped with the national final.
Spelling is important.
Yeah, that's what I do. So I contributed how I see fit.
Amazing. This song by Monique, though, the song is really good, really solid piece of songwriting and production. But it's what she does to it on stage that makes it really amazing. Going from that really controlled robot verse to the full sort of really high emotions of the last chorus. It's a really good performance.
Yeah, and actually, some of them, I think the movement, they could have pushed it more. This is my one criticism of it. They could have pushed it even further. They wanted to make it look pretty, but I think they should have made it look sort of broken and, you know, or broken pretty. And I just think some of those movements could have been pushed a bit more. I don't know, could have made more of it, but again, the potential for this, on that Eurovision stage would have been immense.
I would have done a hair reveal.
Yes. Good idea.
In that bit where the sun comes up, pull the pin out of the bun and then let rip.
Yes.
Oh, what could have been? What could have been? But Lithuania hopefully are going to now go on from strength to strength. They found something that really, really works. They've had Monique grace them with their presence. They've found viral stars in the Roop. They've got quirky Kaira ready to go again. And they may even have something more to hear from the Lithuanian basketball players.
Oh, let's hope so.
I'm going to have to go and listen to that after this, because just thinking about it is making me laugh. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
Monique accepted without question onto the Ile de Besançon song. So that was your 8 records. Do you have a Eurovision luxury you would like to bring with you?
I totally forgot about this. Hold on, let me think.
Okay.
I want to bring Sir Hat's hat.
Do you know where it is?
No, but we'll find it. We'll bloom and we'll find it. And we need it on the island. Just as a nice little reminder of the man, the legend. But also just, we could have so much fun with it. Put it on palm trees, people's heads. We can make a Sir Hat I don't know, not a snowman, what's the sandman?
A coconut and put it and put the hat on a coconut. It would have to be quite a big coconut. We'll make an effigy of Sir Hat on the island, and for this we will need his hat.
We need that. It'll be like Wilson from in Tom Hanks in Castaway.
Yes.
Is it Castaway? Yeah, we'll have a Sir Hat figure, and I think we should do that.
All right, okay, we'll find Sir Hat's hat. We will go down to the Indiana Jones-like warehouse of things that are lost. We'll find Sir Hat's hat, and we'll bring it to the island. And hopefully the most serene daddy's comforting presence will protect us all.
Amen.
Brilliant. Have you got any one of those particular records you'd like to give a sort of honorary douze-point to before we let you roam free on the island?
Ooh, I think it's got to be Polly Geneva, If Love Was a Crime. It means that it's everything to me, so it has to be that.
Oh, and luckily I've got the outfit as well, so... Brilliant. We'll put on a big lip sync in Monty's pop-up Euro club that's running on the Ile de Besançon, and we'll have a cracking time.
Amazing. And I've joined my podcast partner now on the island.
It was a shame to keep you separated.
Yeah, I was struggling, but it's good now.
Brilliant. Right, so speaking of your podcast partner, when is Second Cherry going to get underway for the 2020 series?
We're doing something a little bit different this year, so look us up, because we are doing... There's a few bonus episodes, and I think we're about to start the main Second Cherry contest.
Oh, how exciting. And that will keep us going through the long spring and even longer summer that we're going to have this year.
Yes, and hopefully we will have a live event. We don't know yet, but we are.
All right, okay. I'm going to let you go off, run free on the island. Thank you for joining us, Matt. And we can find you at Second Cherry on Twitter, and your work is all over ESC Extra.
That's right, yeah. Sorry, thanks for the plug. I'm terrible at it. Yeah, at Second Cherry, second_cherry on Instagram. And yeah, just, you know, search it, you'll find us.
Amazing. All right, thank you for joining us. And now, the guitars.